It was late winter of 2009, and Jim Pike was in Afghanistan. He'd arrived there a few weeks earlier with the rest of his U.S. Army unit, the 10th Mountain Division's 3rd Brigade Combat Team. It was windy and cold, and the mountainous terrain looked like another world. A world composed almost entirely of steep slopes and 1,000-foot drops. He was 23 years old and in full battle dress, leading a squad of soldiers through an outlying neighborhood of Asadabad, the capital of Kunar province. Kunar was a fly speck of land wedged hard against the Pakistani border. In good times, it sheltered smugglers moving everything from illegally harvested lumber to drugs. In bad times, and these were very, very bad times, it harbored guerrillas of every stripe, from Al-Qaeda to the Taliban to Mujahideen. Asadabad, a maze of narrow streets and walled compounds, sheltering roughly half the province's 30,000 people, was their unofficial capital. The troops called it Abad. Jim watched his 6-member squad, the lead element in a 3-platoon-strong raiding party, supported by Stryker combat vehicles and Apache helicopter gunships, move down a dusty, crooked street. They kept an eye out for snipers and covered one another as they advanced. An old man sitting on the curb, his ragged, mud-colored chapon pulled tight against the cold, barely acknowledged their passing. They stopped near the door of a weather-worn house. They were pretty sure, based on drone images presented during the pre-raid briefing, that it harbored a cache of contraband weapons. The boxes stacked in the building's dusty courtyard, plainly visible in the photos, were the right shape and size. The soldier on point tried the door. It was locked. Jim was about to order an entry. Then, out of the corner of his eye, he saw the old man in the chapon stand up and disappear down an alley. In Afghanistan, it was never a good sign when people vanished like that. It meant they knew something was about to happen, and that they didn't want to be around when it did. "Hold up," Jim said. But his soldiers didn't seem to hear. They bunched up at the entrance, ready to begin. "Hold up!" Jim yelled. No one listened. One soldier kicked down the door and charged into the blackness. 2 more followed. An explosion rocked the street. Dust and flames poured out of the doorway. The concussion blew one of the soldiers out of the house. He lay on the ground, clutching his face. The other 2 didn't come out at all. Jim rushed into the burning building, trying to locate the missing soldiers in the choking blackness. He staggered around for what felt like forever, walked for what seemed like miles. Slowly, it dawned on him that he couldn't possibly still be in that tiny bombed-out dwelling on the fringe of Abad. That's when he found his soldiers. The missing were Privates Eric Wilhelm and Lou Jones. Both were new to the 3rd. Both were covered with blood, their uniforms shredded and blackened. Yet both were on their feet, standing calmly at parade rest. "Why didn't you listen to me?" Jim asked.
"We couldn't," Lou said. "You weren't here."
The 2, Jim realized, were dead. Yet there they stood, giving him looks that could have burned holes in stone. "We were your responsibility," Eric said.
"Where were you?"
they both asked. Jim tried to answer, but no words came out.
"Where were you?"
they asked once more. Again, Jim struggled to speak.
"Wake up," someone else said.
The darkness lightened, the faces of the dead soldiers faded. A new, only slightly less insistent voice replaced theirs.
"Wake up," it shouted. "Some kid's going nuts with a phaser."
Jim sat up. The newspaper draped over his lap fell to the floor. He rubbed his forehead and looked around. Afghanistan was gone. So was 2009. Instead, he found himself sitting in a heavily upholstered chair in the lobby of the Botany Bay Hotel and Conference Center in downtown Houston. It was late afternoon on a Friday, and he was asleep on the job. The owner of the voice stood over him, a disapproving scowl drawing tight lines across her sun-worn face.
"Hey, Janice," he grunted,
How's it going?
You're lucky the GM likes you, replied Janice Bohica, placing her hands on the sides of her head as if to steady a throbbing brain. But why? I have no idea. You're the last person in the world I'd trust with responsibility.
Jim had heard this spiel before.
He suspected that Janice honed it on a long string of underlings during her off-reference 17 years as the hotel's daytime manager. What can I do for you? He asked. How about getting your act together and behaving like a grown-up? In case you haven't noticed, we're short-handed today.
Jim glanced around the lobby, which was uncharacteristically quiet for a Friday afternoon.
Looks like everything's under control, he said. Aside from 200 or 300 Trekkies, we're pretty much empty.
We have precisely 262 registered GolfCon guests, Janice said. But we'll have north of 3,000 walk-ins for the convention. These people can be very high maintenance. You're going to be running all weekend.
Jim sat up in the chair and yawned.
What were you saying about a guy with a taser?
Phaser, Janice corrected. One of those handheld ray guns from Star Trek. There's a kid on the second floor, and he's pointing it at guests, scaring people.